Hello everyone, I am Joyce Gallagher with the APD Training Unit for Services and Supports. Today we have a special podcast with our guest, Christine Maceo. Christine, can you please introduce yourself?
Hello, my name is Christine Maceo and I work with the Medicaid APD Services and Supports Policy Unit. I am the Independent Choices Program Policy Analyst. I started working with the state back in 2003. I have worked as an eligibility worker and then 8 years as an APD case manager in a local office before I began working as a Medicaid Policy Analyst in 2013.
Thank you for spending time with us, Christine. Today we want to explore some of the trends you see in the Independent Choices Program. We know that you get a lot of questions about ICP, so we also wanted to capture some of those questions and answers here today. First, we are curious about the new requirements that all ICP participants must participate in the EVV or the Electronic Visit Verification Services with Acumen. Can you please share what EVV is all about?
Sure. Let's start by talking about what EVV is and why it's required. So the 21st Century Cures Act is a federal law that requires states to implement EVV for all Medicaid personal care service programs, which includes ICP. EVV means that providers must submit the type of service being performed, the individual providing the service, and the individual receiving the service, the date of the service, the location of the service delivery, and the time the service begins and ends. Congress passed this law because the Office of Inspector General and other federal agencies discovered that states did not know what was happening with in-home service personal care. In order to meet this requirement, the state of Oregon has contracted with Acumen to provide the EVV service. Acumen services are free to all ICP participants, including their payroll service, which would otherwise have to be paid for and managed by the participant or their representative or a paid provider out of the ICP participant's budget.
We know that you get a lot of questions about these topics. First, can you please tell us the difference between option one and option two as it relates to Acumen?
Sure. So using Acumen, option number one is the EVV and payroll service combined. Option two is just for EVV as a standalone service. The participant will need to select one of the following EVV options for their providers to use to capture their time worked. They can use either a smartphone, a telephone landline, or a fob, which is a fixed object that stays with the participant. Acumen trains both the participant and their providers on how to access and use their system for time entry and reporting purposes.
Some case managers have questions about how the FOB works. Can you please provide some details on the FOB?
Well, the FOB is kind of like a garage door opener or a car key clicker that has a button and a screen which will display a code for the provider that they will use later to record their time for clocking in and clocking out for each shift. The FOB must remain with the participant, though. So the first two FOBs are free to the participant and paid for by the state. But if the FOB is lost or broken or the participant just wants a third one for whatever reason, it will cost them $20.
With participants who have chosen to stay with their third-party tax and payroll provider, how is that supposed to work? Is Acumen going to send time records to the participants or to the third party?
Acumen actually does not send information to any outside providers, payroll providers, or accountants. However, the participant can access the information and is able to send it to their payroll agency if they want.
Thank you, Christine. A lot of case managers have been asking us about the ICP participants who pay their providers a salary wage. This is quite common due to the variety of individual needs and can make tracking of time difficult. Any guidance on how to handle such cases?
Yes. So with the EVV changes, ICP participants should no longer be paying their providers a set salary. They should only be paying and indicating on the 548 their provider's hourly rate. I understand that may be difficult for those that live with the participant and do not have a set work schedule. So here's what I've been recommending. Have the participant take their total monthly budget and divide it by their provider's hourly rate to get the number of hours that they should clock in and clock out for each month, and then divide that number by 4.3 to get the number of hours they can work per week. Regardless of what service the participant enrolls in with Acumen, so the payroll and EVV, or EVV only, the provider should only clock in and out for the number of hours that they will be getting paid for within the participant's ICP budget. Any additional hours worked above that, they're considered a natural support.
There is another question that comes up often in training, so we want to share this with everyone listening. Can an ICP provider begin working for a participant while they wait for their background check?
Yes, actually they can. Some ICP providers that do not pass the background check can still be hired to provide services for an ICP participant, but they may not be hired if they are found to be ineligible as a result of their background check. If the background check comes as ineligible, the case manager must contact the participant promptly and tell them that they can no longer pay that provider effective immediately, and they must begin working to find a new provider. The case manager should send a pending notice to the participant or their representative if they have one, and give the participant no more than 4 weeks to hire a new provider and get the provider's background check application submitted for processing. If the participant is not able to find a provider or they just don't hire one, you do need to take action to involuntarily disenroll that participant from ICP and end their ICP payment at the end of the month, unless there's a compelling reason otherwise, which I'm happy to staff with you. Their cases should be converted to regular in-home services, and no, this is not considered an adverse action. Please remember that all ICP providers and ICP representatives, for that matter, who are not licensed professionals, such as a professional accountant or an in-home care agency provider, must complete a background check. ICP representatives who are not professionals may only receive a final fitness determination of approved from the background check unit and must sign the ICP representative agreement before starting their ICP representative responsibilities. A representative may not act as an ICP participant's representative until their background check is complete and approved.
Thank you, Christine. Next, we want to ask about the highest error and how to prevent these for the case managers. Can you discuss those with us?
Sure. The cash benefit amount being issued incorrectly is one area where errors frequently occur. Therefore, I want to encourage staff to always double check that number on either the SCMS screen in the mainframe for those cases that have not yet been converted to the One System, or on the payment request details screen for those that have been converted to the One System. The payment should match the monthly benefit on the 546 IC 2-week form unless the client has a liability or pay-in, if they have one. Please refer to the coding for ICP tool on the ICP page for a screenshot of where the benefit amount can be verified.
Thank you, Christine. So what kind of changes, if any, should be reported to you for the ICP cases?
I always need to be informed when a new participant becomes eligible for ICP, and of course when a participant's ICP case closes for any reason, whether it's voluntarily or involuntarily, or of course when a participant passes away. I also need to know when an ICP participant hires or fires a provider, or if the provider quits or just stops working for any reason. You would use the 548 provider information form that's found on the ICP page for that and indicate the start and stop dates in those text areas on the form. This has become even more critical now that Acumen will be working with the ICP participants and their providers with either their EVV time capture or with their payroll. And without that information being submitted, Acumen would not be able to enroll the provider into their time capture system, and we would be out of compliance with the federal law. So if a participant is using Acumen to manage their payroll, I also need to be informed via the 548 when the provider's hourly rate of pay changes so that Acumen can be informed and update their rate of pay.
Oh, okay, Christine. So what other forms must be sent to you for all ICP participants?
Let me see. First, the Independent Choices Benefit Calculation form, which is the 546 IC 2-week form. The Independent Choices Program Employee Providers Information Form, which is the 548 that I previously mentioned. The Workers' Compensation Consent and Agreement Form, which is the 353 the ICP service budget worksheet, and of course now the Acumen referral form.
Oh, okay, great. Thank you for clarifying this. This is a very helpful resource on the ICP page called the ICP Forms Processing Chart, where you can reference and find the information on all ICP forms, including when the forms are required and to whom they must be sent.
Yes, absolutely. That is correct. The ICP page on the Case Management Tools website has many helpful tools and resources for case managers.
Nice. Well, I think that's about all we have time for this session, and we want to thank you so much for your time.
You're so welcome. I'm so glad I could be here to answer these questions, and please know that if case managers have any additional questions or they just want to staff a case with me, they can always reach out to me at the ICP email box, which is icp.spd@dhsoha.state.or.us. And thank you, everybody.
Thank you.